Hey, everybody, and welcome to the GrayscaleGorilla.com podcast. In today's episode, Chris and Chad and I talk about the upcoming GPU renderer from Arnold. We also talk about what hardware you should buy, specifically if you're on a budget. We also talk about New Year's Eve resolutions and why the beginning of the year might be one of the best times to take a step back and plan out your creative career. Now, before we get into today's podcast, I wanted to invite you to a very special workshop that we're having on January 12th at noon Central Time. And if you use a third-party renderer with Cinema 4D, you do not want to miss this workshop. We are going to show you how you could speed up your HDRI workflow using our new plugin, HDRI Link. This plugin's almost out, and we're really excited to show you how it could speed up your HDRI workflow with any third-party renderer. Now, if you use Arnold or Octane, you really don't want to miss this one because Chad Ashley is excited to show you guys not only how HDRI Link can speed up your workflow, but he's also going to go over a few tips on how to speed up your HDRI workflow in general, even if you don't get Link. So you don't want to miss this workshop. It's going to be January 12th at noon Central Time. And if you want to sign up, make sure you head on over to the page. It's a limited amount of space that we have for this workshop. Head on over to grayscalegorilla.com/HDRI link to learn a little bit more about it, get some details, and you could also learn how to, you could sign up there. So again, that URL is grayscalegorilla.com/HDRI link. And if you are a third-party render user for Cinema 4D, you do not want to miss this one. We hope to see you guys there. All right, with that, let's head in on today's podcast. Well, hey guys, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Woo! Everybody party or stay? I'm a stay-at-home. I'm a stay-at-home guy on New Year's. You guys go out or stay at home?
Nope. Nice and quiet at home.
Shoot. We are so exciting. We're the most exciting group now. I stay.
It's the Office Space thing. I did absolutely nothing, and it was everything I dreamed it could be.
There you go.
Yeah, that's when the crazies come out is when I tend to stay home. St. Patrick's Day, mm-hmm. New Year's. That's my wife calls it amateur hour.
That's when all blackout drunk for the first time.
Yeah, I'm a professional alcoholic. Like I could drink whenever I'm good. But all the amateur alcoholics come out.
They need an excuse to, yeah.
Yeah, they ruin it for the rest of us, really.
It's kind of like anything where, you know, people like if you're skiing, if somebody doesn't know how to ski, they're ruining the day for everybody.
Right. So that's when I stay home. We had some friends over, some beers and a little music. Played a little music. That was fun. Cool. Well, we're back with another podcast. They said we wouldn't continue this past the new year.
Who's they? Who says these things?
The haters, man. You know, they say. But we made it. We made it.
We're rocking it. We're going strong.
We're in 2017. We got some topics today. I thought it'd be kind of fun. First of all, though. Everyone's dying to hear all the new rendering news, Chad. What's new? You keep up with all the new renderers, all this stuff going on. What is happening in Renderland?
I do. And so V-Ray 3.4 came out, which I think I mentioned last time, I believe, which now brings it up to speed, up to date with all the other versions of V-Ray that are actually run and owned and operated by Chaos. This one is not owned and operated by Chaos.
Is this the first time that the Cinema V-Ray is caught up to the everybody else's V-Ray ever?
In my limited history of knowledge on that subject, it is. Maybe back when it was first released. I don't know. And people are always, you know, telling me to check out V-Ray. Well, I'm just going to say this once and for all. I used V-Ray for 8 years in 3ds Max. I know V-Ray. I used V-Ray every day on almost every DK job done when I was at DK was a V-Ray job. Now, when I switched to Cinema, I realized that it wasn't really the true Chaos Group V-Ray. I was very disappointed and I didn't like the features and I didn't like the lack of support and all that sort of thing. It seems to be that that's starting to change now, which is good. So I'm keeping an eye on that, but the biggest news in my opinion, and you know, I'm a little bit biased to my favorite render engine, Arnold, which is snuck out a little image that I think everybody should check out. Basically, they put out a little two image tweet last week, of the Iron Man Hulk suit. One of them was rendered with their GPU renderer that they're developing, and for their CPU renderer, which was really exciting to see that they're making big improvements on their GPU engine for Arnold, which I'm extremely excited about. So that means that someday soon we'll be seeing Arnold on GPU.
Ooh. Now, I don't know if you know this or I guess there's only one way to know, and that's by me asking. I don't know why I start a question with, I don't know if you know this, but a little insight to my weird brain today. Too much coffee. So GPU, is it going to have the same limitations as Octane, where it's dependent on what type of card and, you know, NVIDIA and AMD and all that kind of stuff? Or is it just like...
I don't know yet. I mean, okay. That's the beauty of it. And they're really not saying much about it other than they're trying to make it a one-to-one solution, meaning that it's going to be the exact same thing as the CPU render. You shouldn't see any difference.
And is it because, I mean, here's the other dummy question. Is it because sometimes you want to use GPU and sometimes you want to use CPU, or is it just a matter of like whatever horsepower you have available is what you want to use at the time? Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, there's things that renderers can do to use the power of both, or whatever's available, like Cycles 4D, for instance, can work on CPU or GPU. I don't know how interchangeable it is during the rendering process. If it's able, I don't think is able to say, hey, wow, I'm really stressing. I don't have a lot of cores. I'm going to switch to GPU mode. It's not like a smart switch as far as I know. But I think that it depends on like Octane, for instance, was built on the GPU. It was built on the graphics card. So it's taking advantage of the graphics card. So it's actually like building a house on a foundation. They chose their foundation of the graphics card and built their house. Now, Arnold, which built its foundation on CPU, and now has to figure out how to build that exact same house on a different foundation, that's going to take some time. Now, they might choose to say, well, we're not going to necessarily build our entire renderer on the GPU foundation. We might just use parts of the GPU to speed up our process. Mm-hmm. And that's a route that some renderers have taken, where they don't necessarily go all in on one or the other. They might just use the GPU for the rendering process and maybe use the CPU to, for texturing, to basically offload the memory of textures and what and stuff like that. So I don't know where it's going to end up. I'm excited about it just because I know they're super meticulous and they don't release anything. I know the development team and they don't release anything that's not great. So I know that when they share something like this, it's usually a lot further than it really is because they're very careful about what they release and show off to the public because they love, I mean, Marcos at Solid Angle loves his product, which he absolutely should. It's a great product. And so he's very careful about what he says and what he promises. So when something like this comes out from them, I really get excited because I know it's not just them or, you know, saying, oh, let's just get a little publicity going for the day or the week. Let's boost our, you know, our likes or whatever. I know that it's a legitimate thing. So that gets me excited. And the fact that I'm not seeing the development speed in Octane. I think a lot of Octane users that I've spoken to are frustrated with the lack of development speed on that product. So I think it's exciting. I think people are looking. You got people that have invested in GPU rendering that are looking for an excuse to break into Arnold because they're not doing it because they chose the GPU route. And for them to go to a CPU renderer right now would not make sense for them, which I totally understand. So what this is going to do is it's when they go full GPU, you're going to have an industry standard renderer with over a decade of production features being able to use the GPU or the CPU doesn't matter. That's going to be a pretty big game changer, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I think a lot of people are going to look at it really closely and Redshift as well. I think Redshift, if you haven't checked out Redshift, I recommend checking them out. They're doing some amazing things on the GPU too.
Yeah. This is a little techie thing. I don't know this stuff too well, but something I found interesting, I was watching some information about Moore's law. And if you're familiar, like what is that? What's the cycle? Like every 2 years that the processor will double in power, or every year, every 2 years, something like that. And this has been true since the beginning of computing. But Moore's law is starting to break down. We're starting to hit technical limitations that it cannot double anymore. And this actually started happening a little while ago. And that is why we started getting multiple processors. So when you suddenly had dual cores, that's because you could double the processing power by putting two processors. And then we got four, and then we got eight, then we got 16. And but there's a certain point, there's a limitation of how many of those you can do. And I wonder if that's why there's even more effort going into the video card direction, because we're not hitting that same limitation.
It's funny that you say that, because I just watched a I'll try to remember what it is and link it down below. I watched a video about whether or not the CPU has kind of hit its limit. Because we're not, or not necessarily that it's hit its limit, but are we seeing a significant slowdown in processor speed?
As far as silicon is concerned, yeah, we're starting to hit that limit.
Yeah, because we really are starting to see that, you know, we're not seeing the huge leaps in speed that we saw 5 to 10 years ago. And so that's a big problem. And a lot of it, I think, is if you look at Intel, and I'm not an expert in this. I just like to read this stuff sometimes. So I encourage everybody to research it on their own. But Intel, I think, publicly stated that they were going to focus less on the CPU, getting doubling the speed of the CPU and all of these things, and focusing more on mobile platforms and things like that, because they've and this sucks for us professionals, but basically what they're saying in this article is that they realized that they've kind of hit the limit, or they've made it as fast as they think that it should be for the professional. And now they're going to focus on other things, because to them, the professional shouldn't need much more than, you know, maybe a quad core, processor or something. And so they're slowing down that professional quality development, and we're seeing it happen in other places too, like Apple.
We're I think we're in big trouble there, because essentially I feel like the hardware as a general rule has gotten good enough for almost everybody.
Exactly.
Because it's good enough for almost everybody, they're not trying anymore.
Now here's the good thing. What sector is it the opposite? What sector is it the opposite, where you are constantly wanting more, faster?
Video games.
Yes, thank you very much, Nick. Video games are what is going to put are pushing grip motion graphics. Like, let's just all be honest. Motion designers and motion graphics artists are reaping the benefits of gamers right now, because the gamers are what's pushing the development of the graphics cards, which is pushing the development of, or pushing our ability to render. And not only that, but the machines, the computers that they use to game on are pushing, because we're a really small section of people. Like, we're not a big group of people, motion designers.
Yeah, it's a niche market of a niche market.
I mean, we're like ultra uber niche. And so the gaming industry, without that, we would probably not be doing the stuff that we're doing right now, for sure. So we owe a lot of that to the gaming culture. And that's why I think, a lot of these companies like Arnold and Octane and whatnot, they see that's where the innovation is happening on the hardware side. So let's just get on that.
So for everybody out there, you have a good excuse to go play video games, because you can say, I'm working. I'm encouraging the market to develop better hardware so that I'm going to be able to do more work later.
You're doing your part. That's all. I'm doing my part to push the industry forward.
That's my takeaway.
I've always waited for that time when we could just plug all of everyone's old iPhones into some like grid network and have some like super ability to like super render farm that's just like one pixel at a time per iPhone or something. Like, there's so much data. It's almost like the Uber idea, or like the self-driving car idea, where you have this untapped resource of cars sitting in everyone's garage doing nothing for 99% of their life. And Uber's idea is to like liberate that car, either by getting a driver into it and out on the street to take somebody somewhere, or eventually to just not own a car and just, you know, digitally whistle for one whenever you need one, and it stops and picks you up. So that this idea too of render farms and networks and all the, and we tend to always end up on this topic too, which is interesting. This idea of scaling the data for this kind of specific use. I don't know. There's something there. It's just, it's going to seem antiquated that we all have a render farm in the corner of our office one day. We're all going to laugh at it.
I mean, that's already kind of a thing. I think there's so many studios that invested heavily in CPU render farm, you know, machines and racks and rooms with AC units. And they're out there right now humming away, making money, totally fine. But you know, when you think about what you just said before, at night, maybe they're not rendering. Maybe there's a week where there's not a job happening. You've got these machines that are just sucking up power and sucking up AC and taking up space and costing money, and they're not doing anything. Mm-hmm. I remember at Seagraph talking to somebody who wanted to start a business where they would essentially have, if you had a render farm, if you were a studio that had a render farm and your render farm was maybe utilized 35% of the day, maybe 50% of the day. And so for 50% of the day, your render farm was not generating money. What if you could sign on to a system or a website that would rent out your render farm to people that needed it at whatever, you know, however many dollars a CPU hour. And that way you could at least be making money on it when it wasn't doing anything. I don't think that business ever went anywhere because the whole industry started shifting away from CPU to GPU.
Yep.
But the whole thing is interesting because the studios are actually behind the individual artists in this area. You've got studios that are tied to the hardware because they've made the investment. They've bought these things. They've got people that are employed that support them. And when the industry started changing into GPU, just now you're starting to see studios start to say, okay, when should we start to, you know, change cars and like move from the CPU car and like jump into the GPU car? Or do we do it slowly over time?
Law firms are still using like Windows 95. It's like, we can't upgrade. We can't change. We're locked in.
All of our stuff's here. Well, it's almost like a cab driver situation too, where you're like, oh, we're cab drivers own New York. Like we got this place figured out. And then Uber comes and they're like, now they're at a disadvantage because the analogy to the render farm. Like they already have a sunk cost of like all these cabs and all these medallions. And they're like, mm-hmm. Oh crap. What do
we have to invest in the future? Yeah. Otherwise you turn into a Blockbuster.
Oh man. That's, Blockbuster. Geez,
yeah.
That's so sad.
I don't know necessarily if we're all going to have render farms in our offices, you know, just locally with GPUs, or if it's going to all end up on the cloud and it'll just be on demand.
But there's so many problems with the cloud stuff with copyright and all the legal stuff. Like I know a lot of Chicago studios that can't and won't use these kind of things because they're working on, you know, a new Marvel film that nobody even knows is coming out, for example.
And there's breaches all the time. Jeez,
yeah,
I mean, I think like Yahoo, Target, like it feels like every other week it's like, oh, some major breach where like a million people's information is gone.
No, you're totally right. I mean, that is a huge, I think we all kind of know deep down what, you know, the way that our parents might say, well, I don't want to, you know, get a virus. I don't want to go to that website or open up that email. And we all kind of know that it's pretty rare that that stuff happens. But, you know, in a Marvel film situation or like where it's actually happened, I think in one of the Wolverine movies or whenever that was.
Oh, the version without the effects.
Yeah.
Was awesome. That was that's my favorite Marvel movie.
I think that it's you're
X-Men
without
the effects.
That problem is just nobody's built a business around it yet. That's all that is. I mean, you can sit there and say, well, we're not going to go on the cloud because it's not secure. Okay, well, I guarantee like within 5 years, there's going to be some Marvel Disney certified cloud rendering service that will only service people. It'll be certified somehow where, you know, you as a business won't have to worry about certification. That will happen. as more and more studios want to be on the cloud and not have to have those costs internally, a business will come out of that, I think.
Yeah. There's a vacuum there. Someone will fill it.
Right. I mean, capitalism. And that's the best part of.
Somebody get on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Stop playing your video games and go make this render.
It needs to be like an Amazon Prime kind of situation where everybody feeds into this thing. And now everyone gets all this render time. You know, you get a certain amount per day of render time, and then you also get, you know, the certain group of plugins, or like there's got to be this
rollover minutes.
Yeah. There's got to be some sort of way to like connect all the dots and go, listen, guys, like it's whatever.
I think they're trying.
$200 a year.
There's lots of services out there that are trying to solve that. You know, there's people that try to do it themselves, like making their own Amazon EC. Is it EC3? I think
S3, right? And EC2.
EC2. I've never done that just because I just don't. I'm not. I will mess that up. I know I will mess that up somehow. But yeah, I mean, there's so many different cloud services out there, and they're even seeing that the industry is changing to GPU. So they're scrambling to make GPU data centers to take on some of this rendering. Now, I don't know. Is it Moore's law? Or wait, what is the law where is there a name for it? As fast as a render can be, artists will always need it to be faster.
I don't know that.
That's
one.
Chad's, that's Chad's law.
I think that might be my law. But yeah, it's like as fast as you make rendering, you will always need it to be faster.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there was about a month. There was about a month there where I thought we hit the fastest we would ever need in After Effects anyway, when we were still doing primarily SD. HD wasn't quite a thing that people were asking for yet. SD was still the main output. Mm-hmm. And a new Mac came out that was just screaming, and it was so fast, and you'd hit render and it was almost real time. It would just render all this SD footage, and I was like, oh, I'm living in the future now. And then immediately the next day they're like, new standards, sorry guys, we're running everything at 1920 by 1080. I'm like, that's literally that's like four times bigger. And
dude, when I saw for HD for the first time, I was like, well, we're never going to get jobs done. Right. How will we possibly get jobs?
That must have been a rough transition for a couple of years.
Instantly was, four times bigger. Plus, plus tech, plus all the tricks that you could pull with SD, and it looked awesome on TVs, looked like crap on. I mean, and I know makeup artists are shaking their head at us and going like, yeah, tell us about it. But like all the fake tricks for TV that worked for years was dead with HD.
So,
what a mess.
Because I equate SD as being like, we all were impressionistic painters. Okay. Like, think about this for a second. An impressionist doesn't have to necessarily get every detail perfect. They just need to get the impression of the image. Like a highlight on an eyeball just might be a dab of white paint. But if you zoomed in on it, you're like, oh, it's a dab of paint. Like, I can see the brushstroke. But at 720, you know, in SD, that was totally fine. And now you suddenly are taking impressionist painters and having them do ultra realistic down to the every hair. And it was like, what? Like, I used to be able to cheat and get away with this and this, and now I can't cheat anymore. And it was really, really hard.
720 by 480, folks.
I love though, like it's probably like when you get like your super kick-ass new machine for like a week, it's like, wow, okay, I've caught up and like I can do all the things I wanted to do. And within the end, by the end of that week, you've probably cranked up your render settings, added more motion blur, whatever
it
is, eaten all of that extra hardware. I remember it.
That's the law. We need a name for that law. It's like
the last family computer years ago, the last family computer we got until everybody kind of moved out. My dad got this computer for Christmas that had 19 gigs of hard drive, and he's like, I dare you guys to fill it up. And then like, you know, 9 months later it was full. but it was like, you know, it was a, you know, 50 times bigger than the previous one. It's like, how could we possibly fill it? It's like, well, we'll install three video games.
Yep. I mean, that's really kind of how it is. Like you end up like when the hardware changes to allow you to turn the knobs up to 10, you turn the knobs up to 10.
Right.
And then they invent new knobs, and then, you know, it never ends.
It also has like a code bloat kind of feeling to it as well, which is when you were limited in space and you were limited in time.
Lack of optimization.
Yeah, you had to learn how to optimize every plugin and decide, like, am I doing, you know, motion blur in post, or am I doing it here, or should I just fake a motion blur with like a little echo and like a little trail? You know, like, there were all these hacks around it. And this is the same with 3D, where you have all the crappy lights that ship with every 3D package, right? All those crappy lights are there because they render really fast. And then as computers got faster and faster and faster, we're like, well, you don't need these like Omni lights that don't really exist in real life. We're using things like IBL and HDRI and you know, all this other, and Lightkit Pro, like that, the whole idea behind that was because, like, hey guys, our computers are speeding up. We don't need to cheat as much anymore. And so, yeah, I think it's a combination of both. You optimize less because you're like, I got the speed. I could use the real motion blur. And you also turn on more stuff. It's why, you know, GI, global illumination started taking off in a way that it couldn't before in animation, where it just was impossible before for speed. And you start turning on all the pretty buttons. Ooh,
You can see the parallel in even just video game consoles, like back in the day. And the one I can think of most blatantly is like Sega Genesis or something, when the early games were very, very simple and basic. And then by the end of the generation, they're milking out every tiny little like pixel that they can get out of it. And you're like, wow, the improvement of just software from the beginning to the end, and you're locked in the same hardware, so they had to really optimize and be clever about the way they did it. And even now, I'm sure, like, when a video game comes out in the next gen, it pretty much looks like a previous gen. And by the end of that life cycle of a system, like, you've got so many more polygons on the screen.
And this actually is a question we get through Twitter and on YouTube comments and stuff, by the way, which by the way, keep that up, guys. We love hearing from you about topic ideas, any questions you have. After, if you're listening to this on YouTube or watching on YouTube, comment below. And if you're on iTunes or anything, we have a blog post. You could hit us up there. Twitter's fine too. But what question we always get is like, what computer should we get? Or recently somebody asked us, you know, hey, is this a good setup for a computer?
Oh, it's a giant list of hardware.
I get that all the time.
They just set us a list. And really, I mean, I always try to get answers that work forever. And it's sometimes you have to think a little bit bigger than like, is this video card right for right now? And ultimately, if you could run Cinema 4D, you're already in a place where you could start to make good looking stuff, period. Like, understanding that we all made stuff on computers that are 20 years old, 10 years old. So you can start to make professional work right now on any hardware, as long as you can launch the dang software. So especially early on, it's that thing that I don't think will ever go away, which is early on you get so into the technical side of things and so into like, what camera should I buy and what hardware should I get? And you lose focus of the important part, which is like going out and taking more photos or learning how to design better in 3D, for example. So my instinct whenever I see a big list of things like that is to like say, if this is something you're not interested in, let somebody else like do it, or literally buy what your friend has. Like, there's so many options of like, literally, well,
there's,
Chris,
there's so many ways you could go.
Chris has a laptop that he went and bought on a website, right? So you could just go do that and it works. I don't know.
I get that question a lot about rent because of the rendering thing and whatnot.
Well, you might get a lot because we also say, well, Chad's the only one who knows hardware.
I barely know. Dude, I want to go on record. I've never built my own PC from scratch. I don't trust myself enough to do that. I'm not a computer engineer. That's not what I want to spend my time doing. I would rather pay someone else to build my machine and use my time to create imagery and do CG. That's what I love to do. Of course, I want to have great equipment. Like, every artist wants to have the best brush or the best pencil, whatever. I always ask people, if they ask me that question, I say, well, what are you going to do with it? What do you want to do? And they say, well, I'm a freelancer and I do these kinds of jobs. And then I can say, okay, well, then it sounds like you might want to go this route. I'm a student and I don't have much money and I don't know much about rendering. And then you should go this route, because it really is, there's no one solution for everybody. It really kind of comes down to the work you want to do, how much money you want to spend, and what do you want to get out of it? And what do you want to be able to do with that machine? And how long do you want it to last? All these things. There's no magic solution. I can't tell you the configuration that's the best configuration because everybody's needs are different. I built a system that is really, really expensive. And that was because it's just me in this room. And I want to be able to do everything that's in my head and not have to worry about being limited. And I made an investment in myself. And that's what I did. There's people out there that can do that. There's people out there that can only afford, you know, $1,000 or less. And there's perfectly good systems out there that you could make beautiful looking images on doing that. The thing is, and this is back to what you said, Nick, you can't equate speed and instant gratification that a lot of expensive hardware gives with good. Because you can have the best computer with the best specs and the best hardware and everything's top of the line and still generate crappy images. And that's just because you should be putting your energy into developing your craft and becoming better at what you do and better at modeling, rendering, lighting, animation, whatever it is that you love about 3D. And once you've kind of spent that time and energy doing that, you kind of realize that the hardware it'll change from now and then, but your skills will be getting better and better. Don't obsess about the hardware. Spend more time on the craft than on Amazon speccing out parts, because that's not really what's going to make you better. It might make you a little faster.
I think everything you're saying, Chad, is completely accurate, but I think that most people completely agree or have already taken your advice. And that's why we get so many hardware questions, because they're spending the time learning and doing and making, and they're like, it's time to build a computer. Let me try and ask an expert.
Yeah, that's totally valid. I mean, if you're in the industry for a number of years and you're like, listen, I'm at this point where my abilities, what's in my head, I can't get it out fast enough because my hardware is so slow or it's so old or so dated, then I mean, you can't wave a magic wand and have a really amazing computer for no money. Like, that's just not how the world works. You're going to have to put money aside and know that if you want a machine that's going to do everything that's in your head or give yourself 5 iterations of a job before you show your client, nothing in life is free. You're going to have to pay money, and you're going to have to pay a good size of money if you want good stuff. You get what you pay for, and that's true in life. You get what you pay for. Nothing in life is free. If you want that $10,000 workstation, then justify it to yourself personally first. Say, okay, I'm going to spend this much money. That's a lot of money to spend on a machine, but I'm going to get this much return because I'm going to be able to do this many more jobs on it. I'm going to be able to iterate this much faster, make my clients this much happier, whatever your justification is, and then develop a plan to start saving for that, or say that you're going to take on 3 side jobs every year that are going to help. That money is only going to go to that new system, build. And make it happen, because really, like, I've seen people blow money on the dumbest stuff. And if you're out there and you're, you know, blowing money on, the newest iPhone because it's new, or you bought a car that you probably didn't need to buy. Like, maybe it's a you could have gotten a used car, but you bought like the brand new car. These are all decisions. Like, you got to ask yourself, like, okay, am I investing? Is that money that I'm spending in? Am I investing that in my future, or is that just something that I like?
I was actually going to say that. Like, that's something I thought of a long time ago. I bought my car new years ago, but it was like super cheap. I got like a $15,000 car, brand new, and I've been driving it for like 11 years now. But how much more time, anybody listening, how much more time do you spend in front of your computer than your car? So, like, you're going to go and spend, what, $20,000, $30,000+ on a car, but then you're going to sit behind a computer. I'm not, I guess I don't want to argue too much. You should spend more money, but you're spending all this money on a car. And for most people, it's probably just like a status symbol of some sort. instead of like a functional thing. And in meanwhile, they're spending their life behind a machine, and that's not where you want to skimp, because that's where you're actually like getting
you're getting seconds.
Right. You're buying minutes and seconds for it being faster.
What other instrument do you have the ability to upgrade that could impact your life and your happiness and your fulfillment more than your canvas, your pencil? Mm-hmm. I mean, as an artist, just know that it's not necessarily going to make you better. Like, you still have to work on your fundamentals. You still have to do these things. But look around. Did I spend $1,200 on a TV? Well, then why is $5,000 that hard to imagine for a workstation that you build your career on? Yeah. You know, it seems like a lot of money, but when you put it in a big picture perspective about your actual trajectory as a professional in this business, if you're working from home or you're freelancing and whatnot, is different for everybody. You might not even need to buy a workstation if you work for a studio. But
I was gonna say, the other challenge here is convincing the studio. You gotta get through the money people.
Update.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's that whole, I've been there too. I've had to fight for money for workstations from owners and things of that nature, and that's a little bit easier to quantify, because you can make a case for why a machine will help your company make more money. Mm-hmm. It's sometimes hard for people to do that for themselves because they feel guilty about it, and they feel like, oh, buyer's remorse. Should I have? And then if you're married, your spouse is like, really, you're going to spend that much on a computer? And I got to tell you though, that like, if you look, don't look at it. If you're serious about being a professional in this industry, you can't look at that investment as a luxury. In my opinion, it's a necessity. You should be putting your money into places that can help you grow. That's just my opinion. But
no, I agree with everything you said. I think I'm imagining myself when I was struggling to afford the gear to do this kind of stuff, and some of the things that I learned back then, and I think it's still true. It just reminds me of two things. Everything that you said is absolutely true, which is you need to buy the equipment to do the job that you need to do. By far, you just can't skimp on that. But if you're new and if you're learning and you're just, you know, starting, or you're just starting to get clients, one of the hacks that I did was to always get the second, the last generation of hardware.
Because the second newest.
Yeah, the second newest, because there's. And again, this is for, you know, if you're on a budget, you're saving for this stuff, especially early on when your skills aren't even quite at the level where they need to either. One of the best things you could do is get last year's model, because often the new stuff is, you know, 10% faster, 20% faster, and often you can save a third or more if you get...
It's easily double the price.
Mm-hmm. If you just get a little bit slower, and remember that you can go make stuff that was made last year on that hardware, right? And that's okay. Yeah. And like all the beautiful things that you've seen, you know, just, you know, remember that. Remember your favorite movies and remember that they're made on 10-year-old technology or 20-year-old technology. So that hack alone saved me money back in the day and allowed me to upgrade and feel like I was getting faster stuff, but it was at the cost of just not being way up to date. This is, by the way, true for cameras and a bunch of other hardware. Is like the new Canon Mark IV comes out, awesome. Now you can get that Mark III you were staring at for like a third off, or used as everybody else updates to the brand new one, and you can go learn how to be a filmmaker. And that just reminds me of the second bit, which is, it's a silly analogy, but I come to this, I have to remind myself a lot of this, which is, Eddie Van Halen will sound like Eddie Van Halen on $100 guitar. He is a awesome guitar player, and you hand him a $10 fuzz pedal and a little Marshall, you know, practice amp and $100 guitar, and he's going to sound like Eddie Van Halen. He has all the gear, and he has $1,000 guitars, and he has custom signature series wah pedals because he needs that stuff, or he found a unique way to use that. But he could still take a $100 guitar and make beautiful, or, you know, not beautiful maybe for for him, but
yeah, well, yeah.
Amazing stuff, right? So remember that there's that other side of things that you could always focus on. So if you're looking at training versus hardware early on too in your career, you know, start to think about what's the cost benefit of like this design training that I can carry forward and use for the next 20 years, or this like new video card that is only, you know, a third faster. This seems like we should take another whole episode and talk about these pricing things, because it was something I struggled with definitely early on learning all this stuff, and especially when computers were just barely able to pull this stuff off. It was like,
well, that's a good point right there. I mean, think about this. Think about the fact that you and I and Chris, we all had to learn how to optimize, and there's an art to optimizing. And I think the art is slowly, or maybe not so slowly, dying, because everything is pretty instant now. So if you find yourself that, you know, you can't necessarily, maybe you're new, or you're trying to get into the industry, you can't afford the most best system, and you're gonna have to, you know, create like a more of a budget system, that's cool. Then just become a good optimizer. Become good at the art of optimization, and you will not only do yourself a big favor down the line in learning the art of optimization, but you'll also have as good of quality work that the person with the most expensive machine has, but you'll be able to do it for less money, less time, that sort of thing. But so don't necessarily, and this is, I see this, and it's starting to piss me off, to be honest, because I see these people out there that are so used to not having to limit the bounces on their lights, not having to limit the GI, and not having to worry about this or that, because the GPU will just take care of it. Well, you will someday get a job where that is not going to work, because it's going to, even with 4 GPUs and Octane, it's going to slow down, because you're doing something, you're going to push it. That's just how people, it's just going to be pushed. You're going to have to learn how to optimize, and you're going to want to know how to do that, where to cut. Do I cut the shadow? Maybe this light doesn't need to cast shadows. Maybe this object over here doesn't need to cast shadows. If you start to think about things that way a little bit more, and a little bit less like, well, I know I can get this done if I just buy one more GPU. Like, that's not really, I mean, maybe that's the answer. Maybe that'll work for you. Who knows? But it'd probably be better to figure out how to do it on what you have and just optimize. I don't know.
We're all over the place on that one. Should we move on to our actual topic of the day?
I know. We should. I don't know.
We're already 40 minutes in, I think.
Well, I think it's a good time to do it. It's, thanks for pulling us back from the void, Chris.
I know. The hardware. Going down some rabbit holes.
The abyss.
So yeah. Let us keep going. It's the time of year to do this kind of stuff. I don't know if you guys do this, but you know, we got New Year 2017. We made it. A lot of people do resolutions, maybe habits, new things into the new year that, you know, you plan. I know sometimes I get into planning, sometimes I don't. How do you guys see the new year? Do you guys make resolutions, and if so, which what are they? And what other habits do you guys have, like, toward the end of the year and the beginning of a new year?
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I don't. It's automatically, it's almost like a trick question for me, because I'm kind of against the idea of New Year's resolutions, because I love the idea of goals and resolutions, but I don't see any reason why New Year's should be the limiter. Like, it just drives me nuts. It's the only example I can think of off the top of my head, but somebody who's like, I'm going to quit smoking at the end of this month, or at the start of the new year, or even at the end of this pack or box. It's like, you know what? If I really believed you're going to quit smoking, you would take the rest of those cigarettes and throw them out right now. That means you're stopping. Because if you're already giving all these qualifiers before you even begin, how are you possibly going to follow through with it? So like, if you're like, oh, I'm going to start eating healthier, like, I'm going to wait till New Year's to do that. Like, so the only thing that the new year can really do is it's an excuse to think of a new one. So, okay, fine. Go ahead and think of a new one if you want to. But like, if there's something you've been meaning to do, why did you wait until like 2 days ago to start? Like, why didn't you start it a week ago when you thought of the idea? So like, I'm kind of against that type of thing in general. Like, just do it now. Do it right now, and then you're all good.
What about what about the mental space? I mean, I do the so I totally understand that. But don't you also think that because of holidays time, like it's all to me, it's not just the flipping of a calendar to a new day. That's there's nothing there. But what you really get around the holidays and New Year's is like time off work, time around, you know, friends and family, time away from this like day-to-day craziness that we could all get into to kind of think about bigger picture things and to kind of plan for another year. I mean, do you think there's an angle of that?
That's different though. I think what you're describing is more of like a reflection. And I think I'm not again, I'm with Chris. I think New Year's resolutions are complete bullshit just because it's like, I don't know if you're really serious about it, you would have done it. I think it's just kind of like an excuse to say that it's an excuse to like jump on the bandwagon and be like, oh yeah, I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to start that workout or whatever. And it's like, well, yeah, you might, but more than likely you're not going to. So let's just all be, can we all just be honest with ourselves and just say, I'm going to try to eat better and do whatever. But I think what you're describing is like a reflective thing, which is, I don't normally do it, but I know that you have done it, and I'm curious to know, like, have you always done this reflective period around this time, Nick, or is this something new since starting the business?
It's definitely been a bigger part since I left to start Grayscale Gorilla. It was kind of a little bit more built in, but I think it's always been there where I tend to overthink about everything anyway. But when I'm in the details of things, like in a project or, you know, we're working on new plugins and stuff, like I tend to overthink whatever that project is while I'm in it. And then once I'm away from it, it gives me the freedom to overthink on bigger subjects, right? Like it gives me the freedom to cycle through bigger problems or be able to see, you know, they have that airplane analogy. It's like, if you're on 10,000 feet. If you're on the ground, and that's kind of my day to day is like, there's this fire and we got to do this, write this email, and we got to write, you know, and all the day to day stuff. I feel like holidays gives you almost a forced way to remove yourself, even literally just like you don't have to go to work. Many of us like around the holiday, you get a break away and you get to see like, oh, like life is also a little bit larger here. We have family and friends and health, and you get to hear other people's stories. And I feel like it's just a natural time of year to go, how did last year go? And what could we do next year to make it better? And I agree. I think resolutions are kind of silly in a way of like, you know, you're going to instantly change every habit of your life in one day. But I do think it is a good time to go, am I happy? Like that, here's a really interesting question. Am I happy with what happened last year? If last year were to happen again and the same amount of progress were to happen next year, would I be happy? And so what I tend to do, and we actually did this right before this phone call, is like literally write down everything that happened last year. And this is just a habit that I've had in the past. Write down everything that you've accomplished last year. Like give yourself a moment to pat yourself on the back and look at a whole year's worth of accomplishments. And then be able to look at that list and say either, wow, that I did more than I thought. Or sometimes I look at that list and go, wow, I did a lot less than what I thought. How can I put things into practice next year so that I could pull off more accomplishments? Because it's, to me, it is always about action, and a resolution without action is silly, and a resolution without changing your habits is silly, which I think is what really ruins a lot of big plans for people is they have the thought, but they don't change their actions. We could get into that. But for me, it's always, I don't know, I started the habit partly because it's a natural time to do it. I've also, I forgot what Seth Godin called it, but he did this end of the year project where he actually wrote down everything that happened and just put it out on his blog and said, hey, you know, it's rare time for a company to go like brag a little bit about everything we've done in the past. And I actually went through that process and I looked at it. I'm like, wow, like a lot more got done than I thought. And it made me feel a little bit better. right? Than if I just were to keep plowing forward the way that my brain naturally wants to go. I mean, and I know, Chris, you seem like you're like this too. We've probably had discussions about this, but how do you guys celebrate a win? You know, like something for me, some big project, some big deadline comes and we hit it. And it's so easy for me to go like, all right, worked. What's next? Like, gotta do the next project now. And it's hard for me to take time to like celebrate past accomplishments. How do you guys?
I don't know. I could use some advice on that as a general rule.
I mean, that's my only hack, was literally at the end of the year writing it down and looking at a list. Like, it's not a to-do list. I think he called it like I did it list or something. And looking at your accomplishments and at least saying, okay, here's what I did. Am I happy with it? And also look back at your goals from the previous year or whenever you make goals and say, am I following through with the things that are important to me? So for me, I could think of a couple things that I'd like to do more of, not just with business, but in relationships and family stuff. And I don't know, it does seem like a natural time to start to think about bigger things. But I don't know, Chad,
That's interesting. You know, I like that idea. And I guess maybe I'm just not, I don't know, something about me where I'm just not super... I just don't ever see myself being able to do that. And I don't know if it's just because I'm like constantly like onto the next thing. And in production, like we used to have wrap parties or postmortems where you would sit there and talk about what went good on a job, what went bad on a job, try to learn from it, you know, or if it was a really big successful job that was really stressful. We all go out for drinks or we all go out for dinner or something like that. That's what we used to do. And as time went on, the studios that I worked at, that happened less and less and less because it just became more and more about getting the next thing in and churning it out, getting the next thing in and churning it out. So I do see the benefit of being reflective and looking back on the accomplishments or challenges of the year, and I almost think I should probably do that more, and maybe it's something that needs to happen after every milestone project in your creative career instead of just all at once at the end of the year. It could be something that people could benefit from on a regular basis.
We could use a little more pomp and circumstance, I think, at Grayscale Gorilla.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something I'm guilty of, which is, all right, we did it. We're still here. What's next?
Yeah. Well,
it's also
to everybody.
For most people, at any given point, you're working on four or five things. Mm-hmm. So like, it's like, okay, that one is done, but there's four other things. And now the new one can start. So that you're back up to five. So
it is easier.
You know, it's like, oh, like 15% of my day changed. Like, that's not worth celebrating. But then it's like, wait. We just completed a huge, gigantic process. And that is completed. Like, maybe that should be celebrated and reflected upon. And
I wish we would have done that on every project at studios I worked at, because you learn a lot about why that project was successful. And maybe you learn some things about what you could do better the next time. I think it's we used to call them postmortems, but postmortem sounds so negative.
It sounds like something died.
It really is. And it's like, it was always like the shitty jobs that people would be like, we should do a postmortem on this. Almost like you're going to, like you need to do an autopsy on this bad job to find out like who messed up. But there needs to be, like I think good projects deserve it as much as bad projects, because I think you could learn, like for instance, you know, in our case, was the Top Coat. When I first started, what did we launch? We launched the Top Coat thing. Yeah, right? Top Coat. And we worked together like really, really well as a team on that. And that was a really smooth release. And I think we all were just like so kind of like happy and not surprised, because I think we all knew that it would go well. But we were all kind of like, wow, this worked really cool. And then we just like, okay, let's do the next one, you know? And I think maybe we could have used a day, or not a day, but at least a few hours to be like, okay, so let's identify the parts of this that and of why it went well, so that we can make sure that we do this again. And like that's an important thing. I think everybody
the way that you're describing it too is like on a, and I think to take this to everyone's career, on a macro, I guess on a micro level, you can look at it and go, what other tools do we need to do the next project? Or maybe, you know, I'm thinking of the freelancer out there listening, like, do you need another plugin for this next thing or a piece of hardware or to bring somebody on next time? Like those smaller bits. But also it's a good, to me, the end of the year or even quarterly or halfway through the year is a nice time to go, am I doing the work that I want to, am I doing more of the work that I like doing? Am I working with the clients that I like to work with? Am I, like those slightly, even just slightly bigger questions of like, is this pushing me toward an eventual goal of being happier or being more successful or being more fulfilled as an artist? And those questions tend not to get asked because we're all so busy day to day. And it's like, who's got time for these, you know, woo-woo questions when I got some work to do here, dude, you know, shut up. But I do like the freedom to take a step back and be a little bit more philosophical and be a little bit more maybe selfish is the word, but just like, yeah, self-aware maybe is a better word of like, somebody said it as like, I'm climbing this ladder really fast and that's good, but is my ladder on the right wall, right? Am I aiming in the right direction so that when I get there, I'm in the destination I originally wanted and not just climbing without looking up or where this is heading or whatever analogy you want to use. But to me, this end of the year is, and beginning of the year too. I mean, I don't think it's too late for anyone out there that wants to go like take half a day and go write this stuff down. For me, it's been helpful to write it down physically on paper and revisit it. I know journaling is a big deal in a lot of circles and a lot of people say do that all the time. I'm not big day to day on journaling, but I do, when I have these bigger thoughts, take a step back and say, let's make sure we're aimed in the right direction and that we all, when the train stops or when we get to the top of the ladder, wherever, we're all at the place where we wanted and not just working to get more work done. I don't know.
That's a lot to take in.
That's a big topic for the end.
That's big topic, dude. Like, I don't even know. Like, I'm trying to, like, throughout my career, I never thought that big picture. Like, I didn't sit down when I was 29 or even 25 and say, someday I'm going to work at Grayscale Gorilla and that's where I want to be. Like that's where I want to be. You know, I just didn't do that. I guess maybe I should have.
Well, but, you might have a personality too, Chad, where you see the forest and the trees at the same time. And there is a personality type that has that, which, and the way I think about how you talk about things, you do have a more macro and micro view when you talk about stuff. You could see into the future a little bit further and start to connect dots earlier. So you might have just been doing that with your career and saying, hey, I know this company isn't really going to last, or I might.
Yeah, that's true. I think I attribute that to instinct though, because, and I think that a lot of people, and this is a whole other podcast, instinct. You know, I'm a huge believer in listening to that inner voice, because I do think as humans we have a lot of intuition that we don't really tap into. And I, throughout my career, have been really good about knowing when it was time to make a move to a different company, or maybe hire someone, or take a job, not take a job. And that's something that it's not a logical thing. It's not a process for me. It was always just a gut reaction. And maybe that's what it is, the being able to see from far away. But really, it's just tuning in to that gut instinct that I think we all have. Some of us just have maybe not learned to amplify it or listen to it as closely. There are signs. If you're at a company and you're not happy, and if you really listen to what's going on around you and your own body even, you'll know pretty quickly if it's not a healthy place for you. Mm-hmm. It's just being in tune with that and have that gut instinct. And then also there's like some really tactical things that we could talk about at a future podcast about, you know, when it might be a time to make a move if things aren't going the direction that you want to go.
Well, if I can take your analogy, Nick, and shift it a little bit, and maybe Chad, this is maybe a little more along the lines of what you do, is I don't think of things so much as a climb, because that's almost implying like a destination where I'd be. It's more like, okay, there's a path that I'm on, like I'm moving forward on this path, and you kind of look back and you're like, do I like the path that I'm on? Like, is this working well for me? Am I enjoying it? Am I happy? Okay, cool. I will continue down this path. Where it doesn't, like for me, I do feel like happiness is more of a day-to-day. Like, do I feel happy? Do I feel content? Like, am I happy with the way things are going? And I don't there's goals and things I have, but I don't have like one day I'm going to do this one great thing and that's the peak I'm aiming for. And I think that can be good if you have a really distinct goal and you work towards it. But I think that can also be a dangerous thing because life doesn't just climb straight up. So,
no, I mean, it's not about the destination. It's about the journey. And that's totally true. And I think if you're just open to, and this is going to sound really new agey and corny as hell. So whatever, dude, I'm the guy who equated creative process to taking a dump, so it should be no surprise, which that phrase just made me lose my train of thought actually, but
journey, really, not destination.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. So it really is like about being open to the journey and open to I worked with a guy that really put it really well. He's in, and his name is Roy Skillicorn. He's a fantastic guy, really, really smart guy. He said, life is kind of like a river, and you sometimes just need to let it take you where it's going to take you, and be open to passageways that it might fork off into. And remember that it's really hard to swim upstream. And that was really profound, because it really is like that. It's like sometimes you just have to be open to where the path that you're on could take you. And be willing to say yes, be willing to say no, and have the instinct to know which is going to be better for you. And if you're standing still in the river or trying to swim upstream, you're probably not a very happy person. But yeah, the journey to me has always been what it's about. Like I didn't think I would end up at Grayscale Gorilla, yet here I am, and I'm happier than I've ever been in my career. So like that's just me being open to the stream, man. Like I just kind of followed this, and this is where I am. And having a really strict goal is good for some people, but I mean, I don't know anybody. I can't think of one person that I know that in their 20s, 30s had some like really solid goal that they've been working towards their entire life and have made it, you know, the exact thing that they had in mind. I just don't know I don't know anybody like that.
I know a handful of people that are like, I want to work for this company. And, you know, it's like, whatever, they want to work at ILM or something. It's like they work and they finally get there.
Yeah, that's different though. Cause I mean, I guess I was thinking more along the lines of like, I want to be rich and, you know, make an impact on the world or something like that. And there's people that have goals like, I want to work here, I want to live there. Those are really easy things to shoot for. I mean, it's not impossible to go and live in a different city or work at a place if you know people there and you make inroads and you finally get a job there, whatever. I guess I'm thinking more like loftier things. Like, I don't know anybody who has set out to, I don't know, maybe own a multi-billion dollar company or something. Like I don't know people like that, but then again, like
I
don't know that many people that are that motivated, I guess.
I see what you mean, like about the big end goal. And I definitely don't have one of those. I mean, the goal is to be happy in another 5 years. And I guess what I've seen by my own behavior in the past is that I go into what I'm interested in so heavily that I eventually emerge out with some skills that might be useful to some people. So if you think about you know, photography. I got so into photography, took so many photos, started taking photos while I was at, you know, Digital Kitchen, and had the opportunity at that moment to become a photographer, right? I even dabbled in like shooting some friends' weddings and stuff to say, like, is this interesting to me? And what I find is I never think far enough ahead to go, do I want to become a person that does this for a living?
And yeah, but you are always open to the paths.
And I'm willing to try it. I'm willing to try the path, but I also am, and I'm getting better at this. I never was smart enough at the time to look forward far enough to look at photographers and even talk to one and say, what's your day like? Like, that never dawned on me, because what I was interested in was the day-to-day taking of the photo and processing and learning the technology and learning the art of it and all that stuff. And then I never, and same with motion design, same with all this stuff, my story about After Effects and learning those things. The reason this taking a step back is so important to me is to extrapolate down the path or the river and say, am I on the right path, so that I, when I get closer to, you know, I don't know, I'm losing 100 analogies here, but as I progress, am I becoming the person I want to become? And the one that's the example all the time is lawyers and doctors and stuff. It's like they go down that path to become that, and they don't really, so many people drop out and don't make it, mostly because it's harder than they thought, but they also started to see like what it's like to do this all day, like work the hours, the stress, the like literally, like, can you deal with being around blood? Like, you might not want to be a doctor, but I see myself as that person, which is like, I know I'm going to learn how to fix people. And then I get 2 years into it and then realize, oh, I actually really don't like being around blood. And so what I need to do constantly is take a step back and go, am I on the right path, so that as I gain new skills, it's valuable long term for me and not just like an extended hobby. I don't know if that maybe that's
no, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm kind of getting an insight, I think, to your process and getting back to the original topic. You know, I find it really interesting how you ended up starting GSG, given that, you know, it was all kind of just a big experiment and just kind of a big, you know, it was by chance that this is all here.
Well, but yeah, and to make this, I would love to just sit and talk about me all day. I love that. We should we should do at least two podcasts, because this is like a little therapy for me. It's nice. But to make it,
I'm about to really crack him open, folks.
Here come the waterworks. The reason I say all this is to make it to hopefully somebody out there listening is to go like, oh, that might be me one day. But because I see that in so many people's actions, which is not seeing where they're headed, but so focused on learning this new fun thing, which I never want to discourage. I'd never regret anything that I learned. Always applied to the next thing.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. Do you think you would be where you are right now if you thought too much about these goals?
I think what I'm saying is, as I became more clear about seeing what my life would have been if I stayed working in, like, what I'm saying is I am here and I am more happy with my career because I started asking these questions. That's what I'm saying. Is like,
okay. So these questions happened. So I'm just trying to clarify for myself and for everybody at home, you kind of saw, you came to a crossroads when you were in production where you were either going to stay in production or you were going to try to make whatever this would become. And you took a step back and did this process where you kind of looked at it and said, okay, am I going to be happier 10 years from now on that path, or am I going to be happier 10 years from now on that path?
I mean, I was on the path to be the creative director. like I was on the path. I was being groomed, right? Like I knew I had to learn a ton more design skills. I had to learn leadership skill, like all those things. But I saw very clearly, like I could go in this direction. I could go and be, you know, the people that I learned from and looked up to where I worked, and eventually have their job. Maybe not there, but somewhere else, right? I could have opened a studio. I could, like, there, those paths were there for me. And as I took a step back, I realized that the thing, and again, this isn't about me. It's about hopefully everybody understanding where they want to end up. And what I realized was I was having more fun and was better at learning new things and explaining it to other people than anything else in my entire career path. And what if I did that for a job? And that's where this stuff happened. So like I'll be happy about talking about my path, and I do a lot because I think it's important that people understand where I came from. But also the reason I talk about it a lot is because I don't think a lot of people think of their career path long term and try to make plans to make them more happy. So for me, I said I looked at people that were doing my job 10 years out that followed that river. And I said, I don't really see myself as that type of person. I don't have the skills they do. I'm not interested in learning the skills that they have. You know, I'm not a natural designer. Like a lot of the people that I looked up to had these like amazing design skills and taste that I just didn't have. I would have had to fight that tooth and nail to become as good of a designer as any one of those people that I looked up to that had the job that I was going towards, right? So that plus this idea of learning and experimenting and playing that I love so much, and the idea that I already had this small audience on Grayscale Gorilla that liked my tutorials all snapped together to go try something, and mm-hmm. it just so happened the thing that I tried worked. But I would have never made that snap if it weren't for taking a step back and going, oh, this is a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I would have put my head down and if I would have done what most people around me would have done, is I would have gone and been a creative director, basically, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was the path that I think I went on that path. I was on that path for a long time. And it's interesting, though. I think it's good to hear that story, because I think that it kind of reinforces what I was getting to before, where I think people just need to be open to the path and come up for every once in a while and make sure that you're making yourself happy, and hopefully you're headed down some goals that they're going to lead you there. But be open to things that come along the way, opportunities that come maybe in the form of a job or relationships, whatever, and be open to them. And that's a really important lesson too, that I hope people learn. And I there's lots of things that I'd wish I'd done differently throughout my career, but I think I've made some pretty decent decisions along the way. And that's just from being able to take a step back and like listen to that inner voice and be like, is this really, should I be talking to this person? Should I be working here? Like that kind of reflectance is good.
I want to hear from Chris before we take off, because I know Chris, well, I do know that Chris, you know, your story, right? You learned Cinema 4D and knew so much about it. And so how did you go from there to your first job? And how was that process? And what made you think to start the Cinema 4D meetup? And B, like how did you start to do things like tutorials and teaching and all those kind of things?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a lot of it was just me going with the flow, largely too. Like I was absolutely in school, I was absolutely obsessed with cinema, so I was in Cinema 4D all the time. And then there wasn't the proper teacher in this college course. So after 2 years of obsessing with it, I graduated and they immediately hired me to teach it. So I started teaching Cinema 4D in college. So that's kind of started me doing a little bit of public speaking, especially at my age. I was essentially teaching people exactly my age. So that was intimidating. So I got to learn how to start teaching. And man, you will never learn some of the basics of Cinema 4D faster than having a classroom of people breaking it. Like, you can learn everything that can go wrong. So that was a good beginning of expertise for me. And then, yeah, it was just kind of finding my first job, having a lot of free time in that job and being obsessed with that. Having the free time in the job to obsess over Cinema 4D even more and learn more and more and more of it. I've said it before, but I'm glad Reddit didn't exist back then, because I probably would have been destroyed. But instead, I just spent all my free time learning more cinema. Actually, that's pretty useful. If you're in a job and you have free time and you don't want to slack off, or if you want to even still look like you're working, if you really enjoy the software, you really enjoy the software you're using, like if you really enjoy 3D, you can just keep working in more 3D. And okay, you're not working at a specific job, but you're constantly giving yourself new skills that will be useful all the time. You know, I did that all the time. I completely learned all of Espresso at that job to make tools to make my job go even faster, to give me even more free time to learn even more Cinema 4D. So you're not working on a specific project, but you're learning more about the software. And right. You can't do that if you're on Reddit or watching YouTube videos or something.
No. No, and that's a good point too, because like I think there's a lot of people out there that think, oh, the job's done. I guess I'll just, you know, go catch up on my Facebook and whatnot. And a lot of times when you're working from home or you're a freelancer or whatnot, you are your own keeper, I guess would be the best word. Like it's on you. Like you're not gonna have a creative director walk by and tell you, hey, stop looking at YouTube and get back to work. So you have to be really disciplined. And I think that's an important thing to learn, is just like knowing that. I guess what I'm getting at is like, I didn't have that. I was always in a studio where like, if you were slagging off or doing something, somebody would see that and they would call you out on it, or you would immediately be put on another project because it was obvious that you weren't busy. But if you're a freelancer working from home or whatnot, it's easy to imagine to slip into habits where you're constantly on other websites and not really improving your skills. Mm-hmm. Did you have that? Did you like, were people, how are you able to just screw around all day in cinema and not have anybody be like, yeah, you need something to do? Like, why aren't you working? Yeah,
well, I get to be in a very unique circumstance where I worked for a company that did corporate theater. So like, you know, imagine what's the go-to I always use? Imagine like the American Idol stage where it's like all the scenery and lights and all that stuff. We didn't do that specifically, but that type of thing where we design the stage and the sets, and then the back shop would build it and ship it and work it. So it's my job to do all the previs on it. I would sometimes design, but mostly take what the client says they want, design the entire thing in 3D, and then it would end up getting built. But I replaced somebody who was very slow at it, and I came in, I was very fast at it, and I was the only person doing that, and that was kind of the only work for me to be doing. So, and then after me being there for about a year, my immediate boss quit, and he didn't get replaced. So I suddenly was just reporting the individual project manager.
You had the dream job. Yeah. You had the ultimate dream job.
Not only that, but we had this awesome art room, the art room in the place. It was great for me. It was a room right in the middle of the building, so there was no exterior light whatsoever. But my desk position, nobody could see me at all. And so like essentially because I just reported individual project managers, I never had anybody come up to me to be like, hey, why aren't you doing this or this or this or this? I always had jobs and everybody would come to me and I would get all that work done 100%. And everybody's always super happy with all the work I was giving them. And then it was just kind of based on my own, I guess, kind of like work ethic and interests. I was like, okay, I'm going to spend more time learning Cinema 4D, learning the tool better, experimenting, like learning Espresso, making more tools to make my job even easier. So it was kind of by choice that I got to spend that much time, because the whole time could have been on YouTube or something instead of doing these things. So that worked really well. But as a slight counterpoint to some of the other things that we've been saying, like go with the flow and whatnot, starting the user group is kind of the opposite. And I don't want to get into it because we're already running long, but that was like almost through sheer force of will that didn't come naturally. Like it was a very small meetup group in the beginning, as me and Jack Bransfield kind of got it off the ground, and we were meeting every single month, and we got a contact at a local college. So we were in their classroom every month. It was Jack and I coming up with tutorials saying, hey, everybody, come hang out. We're going to do a presentation. And it was like 3 people, 5 people, 4 people, 6 people, 8 people. And we did that for 2 years of like just brute forcing our way through this until finally a couple people from like the creative director and all of his, all the artists under them came to the meetup and they're like, oh, we're going to check out this meetup. And it's like, oh my God, a studio showed up. This is amazing.
What studio was it? Do you know?
The first one was actually Protoculture.
Nice.
So Protoculture showed up and we had some people who got jobs at different studios and whatnot. And finally somebody's like, oh, like we were like, hey, could we maybe host at your place? And that's when it took off and we started being able to grow it. But that was 2 years of just commitment and effort and stress of like, okay, we got to come up with content. We got to like plan the meeting. We got to get everybody showing up. We got to keep getting the word out.
But what was it took a while. What was the impetus for that? What was the impetus? Like, what was the start to think that was what you wanted to try and do? You know, like to bring back to like planning it. How did you go, I know we should start a group?
Well, I think that it's twofold. One was, back in the day, even when this happened, I think it was still CG Talk, now known as CG Society, which is a forum that you can go to. It's actually more than a forum, but I was on the forum all the time. And on, I forget even which sub forum it was on, but somebody was like, hey, does anybody live in Chicago? And so there ended up being like a Chicago meetup. And it was just like, oh, okay, everybody's in Chicago. Let's go meet up. And 4 people showed up. And
like, it's working.
And well, 4 people showed up. One of them never, ever showed up again. And then
forget this.
And two of the other, and there's 2 other people. One was a guy I know less who actually, we do stuff with him still. He does beta testing for us and whatnot. But then there's another new guy named Jack Bransfield. And so him and I were at the first meetup ever. And we were like, this is cool. And we kind of talked about it. And everybody who was there like was a Cinema 4D user. So it's like, okay, let's start a Cinema 4D user group. And me and Jack never stopped showing up. Like total consistency. Like no matter what, we're going to have a meetup. Like we're going to make it happen. And it's just, we never allowed ourselves to be like, we don't have something lined up. We just won't do it. Like this month we, because it always happens right around the holidays. Every studio is like, oh, like we totally want to host, but we can't do it this month. So we have like 4 different places lined up for 2 months from now, but none for this month. So you know what? We're going to go just have a hangout at a bar because we're going to have a meetup. It's just like you had to stick with it. You have to go through. And eventually it started working. And so, like I said, this one is through sheer force of will. And my motivation was just before that meetup, I literally knew one person who used Cinema 4D.
Wow.
And
that's crazy, man.
And then it was just like, we're going to start meeting more and more and more and more to the point where Cinema 4D is like, Chicago's a huge hub for Cinema 4D now. So
yeah, no, that's crazy, man. It really, and I saw it happen. I saw it change. I saw it go from, this Maya Max town, which never had a community like that, by the way, ever. We had meetups and whatnot, but they were usually hosted by Autodesk or, Alias Wavefront, whatever. And they were never that social. So me on the outside looking in, watching your community grow, I was always like super jealous. Like, why don't we have those meetings about 3DS Max? Like, why isn't there anybody doing that?
And no low for Max. Yeah,
I know. And it was like, but it knowing now that it wasn't something that was like, well, we've got all these people, let's all just get together. It was literally through your blood, sweat, and tears that it happened. It didn't just happen. It happened because of you and Jack. That's really pretty, that's a pretty big accomplishment and should be an inspiration to all those people out there that,
yeah, it's kind of a nice,
work really hard.
It's a nice analogy to kind of wrap things up as we run late again. The podcasts get longer. I kind of like it. We get to dive deep into this stuff. But that story, Chris, reminds me that it's a little bit of both. It's stepping back and thinking about maybe where you want to go and some opportunities, but then putting your head down and deciding to just do it after that. Like the way that you are like, oh, this could be a thing. And then you said, this is just a thing now. Every month we're showing up. And it grew into what is now hundreds of people or over 100 people.
Now we have half res and we get 300 people showing up.
Right. So it seems like, it's almost a combination of taking a step back and looking at the opportunities that you do have. And at least for me, once I do that and start to go in a direction, that's when I almost have to close off what are all of my other opportunities and put my head down and get to work on this path that I do want to create, and then come up for air again and say, am I in the right area, and then get back to work. So I don't know if that's a way to tie all of this back together, but if those of you out there are, you know, unhappy or thinking about a different path, one thing to think of is just to hear more stories from people that have done it in all over the place. Don't just go to one studio and say, what are my options? Chris worked at a place that did corporate 3D lighting and production, right? They did the whole staging.
Yeah.
And Chad and I worked in production for commercial work and movie title work in Chicago. And there's people doing character animation. There's people doing local commercials at every level. There's people doing sports graphic. Like, go find what path you want to follow and learn more about that, and understand that there are a bunch more options than just whatever the people around you assume you're going to go do for a living. I don't know if that's helpful for anybody.
That's a great wrap up.
But, you know, we're running long and try to tie it up, folks. But I think I say this at the end of every podcast, but these kind of topics I really enjoy. If you guys want us to dig more into any one of these things, let us know in the comments. Let us know on our blog, on YouTube, on iTunes. We've also been getting some reviews, which we really enjoy reading. And so thank you guys for leaving reviews on iTunes. And another reminder that all of our old podcast episodes are now available for download. iTunes used to cap it at 10, I think it was, or 15 episodes. And now with our new system, you can actually go back and watch or listen to all the way back to episode one. So check those out. There's some good ones back then, and including some interviews as well. Check those out. In fact, Chad was an interview before.
All right.
Before he was working at Grayscale Gorilla.
Oh, that'd be funky to listen to.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah. That's from last year, maybe.
Was maybe it the one years? That we did right before I came on board?
It was.
Oh, I thought you meant like years ago, like way before.
No, back then we have some other ones though. We have some good ones. But anyway, thank you guys for listening, especially this long. I really appreciate it. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope you have a prosperous, exciting, happy, fulfilling 2017. And guys, thanks for joining as always. And I think we'll say goodbye for now.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.